5 straight years of economic recovery and the slow restoration of financial stability cannot forestall the inevitable question. They're not going to blow it again, are they? Well, economist Colm McCarthy is going to look at the country's finances and related matters. Colm, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, are they going to blow it again, or is Pascal just inherently, innately prudent?
Well, we'll see. It's April, and around this time of the year, every year, the Department of Finance initiates the preliminary discussions about the budget, and the budget nowadays is in October. And all the usual suspects have been out already, getting their press releases into print, saying we need this and we need that. And I don't just mean public service trade unions, also various business lobby groups and regional lobby groups and all the rest. And this is an annual event which rambles on from now until about the end of July, when they all reach for their buckets and spades and they head off to line the beach for a while, and then they come back. It intensifies in September, and then there's the budget. Mm-hmm. And in between now and then, whatever small amount of leeway the minister might have for either tax cuts or public spending increases will be spent 20 times over by people, all of whom are angry that their needs have not been met.
Mm. He is talking about the rainy day fund, shoving the cash under that particular mattress.
Yeah.
He's also talking about enhanced capital spending rather than putting money back in our pockets, which was the original idea.
Whose original idea?
I mean, that was the talk around Fine Gael particularly, that we'd get more cash back. And, you know, because we are, they say, a high-tax economy for all those people working in the IFSC.
Yeah, well, that's as may be. First of all, the rainy day fund is one of these phrases that I think was turned up by Michael Noonan initially. The first point to make is that it's going to rain at some stage. We need to be clear about that, and I'll come back to that. Ireland doesn't have a fund. It has an enormous outstanding national debt of 200 billion euros.
So here we are with this massive debt, and then we have a small envelope on the side into which we stuff a little petty cash.
Yeah, it's a bit like saying, I am a saver and I'm well off because I've got 1,000 quid in the post office. Mind you, I owe 1,000,000 quid to somebody else, but I put an extra tenner into the post office.
So if the minister had 3 billion, say, should he just pay down debt?
Okay. The whole conduct of Irish politics, particularly in election years, and with the complicity of the media, is conducted on the basis that somewhere in the Department of Finance there is an enormous treasure chest, and it's full of gold and jewels and silver and dollars and all sorts of wonderful stuff. And the only reason why they won't open this and give it out at the street corners is pure meanness. Now, this is not the case. There is an enormous filing cabinet in the Department of Finance full of IOUs that we've issued with tremendous energy over the last decade. The country hasn't run a budget surplus for 10 years now.
So we are still living beyond our means, even in this current boom.
I'd put it a little bit differently. The budget deficit last year was small. We finally got it down to a low level. The government still borrowed money last year. The national debt went up last year. I mean, to listen to people, you'd imagine that we were on easy street and that we were a wealthy Arab state with massive sovereign wealth fund or something like that. The problem is really this. When you are heavily indebted, as we are, it's a bit of an illusion that you can borrow easily. And we can. At the moment, the government's able to borrow money at low interest rates. But that's a temporary thing for all sorts of reasons. And if in the period ahead, by which I mean a 5 or 10 year view, if things get messy again, which they could do, I mean, the economy's had a very good run, but it could get messy at some stage. If that happens, you don't want to be facing into more heavy borrowing.
So therefore, we should try to run at least a small budget surplus every year.
Yeah, well, but well, that's
in,
what,
in other words, not borrowing more.
Yeah, that's what we did before. Your older listeners will remember, and you might too, that we screwed things up very badly in the 1980s. The banks didn't go bust in the 1980s, thankfully. But the government went off and borrowed money like there was no tomorrow.
And we had Charlie Haughey saying, we have been living beyond our means.
Yeah, and he was right. But eventually, at the end of that decade, there was a price to pay. And the price was a sharp reduction in the budget deficit. And the government then ran, through the 1990s, ran small budget surpluses for a while and got the overall burden of debt down to a much safer level. And then give it a last jack and off you go.
Here we go.
And do it all again. The second time with the assistance of the banks, God bless them. So we screwed it up even worse. So it's really important this time round, I think, that everybody understand that getting back to a policy of modest budget surpluses for the next 10 years is the prudent and sensible thing to do.
And when will we ever pay down that $200 billion?
You don't have to pay it down.
You just roll it over.
You can, yeah, you roll it over when you can, and at the moment we can, but some of it comes up for repayment each year. An awful lot of government debt is borrowed on a kind of a 10-year time frame. Some of the Irish debt is even longer now. Some of the official debt is 20 years and longer. But each year, there's several billion that has to be produced to repay people, and that has to be borrowed afresh. And your ability to borrow afresh is unpredictable. And we found that out. You'll remember this in 2010. We thought that with sufficient budgetary adjustment here, we could retain our access to the international bond market. And we suddenly discovered that we couldn't. We couldn't borrow one red cent from anybody.
Okay, so therefore we have to be prudent in what we spend, and that it should match more or less, but hopefully more, what we take in our taxes.
In government tax revenue.
Yeah, in government tax revenue. The question is then, health is always looking for more money.
Correct.
We seem to spend a huge amount on that.
Correct.
We have capital projects, some of which you might view are unwise, like Metro, but that's Metro North, or whatever it's called now, long-term kind of stuff being funded on a multi-annual basis. And then you have what the government pays out in salaries and other expenses every year. It is your view that we overpaid everyone before the cuts. So the cuts were an adjustment, bringing kind of sense to payrolls and so on. And now people want to go back to what was overspending at the time.
Yeah, well, that's kind of history in a way. But I agree with the essence of that. In the years prior to the banks going wallop, the government was ramping up both current and capital spending very quickly. It was a very big capital budget at that time in, 2004, 5, 6, 7. A lot of the motorways were being finished around that time. And there was a lot of money spent on things that you wouldn't imagine.
But you would say that probably has repaid the effort, because the motorway system has improved.
Yeah, in the case of the motorways, but there was a huge amount of money spent on other stuff that that I don't think anybody would really regard as a priority except the people involved. But the main point is that the situation now is that public spending under various headings is back nearly in line with tax revenue. So the budget is nearly balanced. And the politicians shy away from getting it. They just can't. It's not in their nature to finish the job. And I think the last couple of years, the government has said, we'll take a halfpenny off tax and we'll add a halfpenny to something else. We might have been better off if we had no flipping budgets at all.
Just carry on.
Just let it go. Things are going fine. And it's very difficult to persuade the political leadership. It's not just an Irish problem. But there are times when the best thing to do is to do nothing at all and just let it improve.
But in terms of, say, infrastructural development, and I know you have issues with Metrolink, called, because you've got to look at the cost-benefit analysis. What is wrong with their plan to ship people to the airport on a grown-up tram?
OK, well, let me come back to the Dublin Transport in a moment. But generally, it is true that capital spending in the period since 2009 has been at a lower level. It's begun to increase again the last couple of years. People think that the adjustment to the Irish public finances was brought about by various current expenditure cuts. There were some of those, but not as many as people think. The main adjustment in those years was increases in taxes. I mean, there was no
sustainability. The USC and all of that.
Particularly USC, but also there were increases in value-added tax and various other things. Cigarettes went up every year by quite a bit.
So it's not that they've been better at managing, it's just they've taken more of us.
They've increased taxes, and the public capital programme was cut very severely. The cuts in, people don't see the reductions in capital spending because it's something that would have been built that wasn't built.
Yeah, but they see kids without a classroom.
Yeah, except there aren't, you know, I haven't noticed any kids sitting out in fields, getting lectures from teachers. But
no, but good planning would say if you're going to have an increase in population, an increase in the primary school intake, that you should be able to house them and educate them properly.
Yeah, yeah. Although you want to be careful even about that, and I'll come back to Dublin Transport in a second. There's going to be a bit of a bulge over the next few years in the number of kids in the primary school system. And that is an echo of what the birth rate was 5 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. However, the birth rate has fallen in the last few years.
So don't build, cope.
Do not go off and build a great big estate of schools that will be busy for a few years and, what are we going to do with that?
So, in other words, try to make do with what you
have. Well, sometimes you do have to make do and not race around building stuff. You asked about
The transport.
The transport in Dublin. There's a couple of background things that we need to bear in mind always about Dublin. Dublin, first of all, is not an enormous city. I mean, people go on about it as if it was flipping Tokyo or Rio de Janeiro or somewhere. It's a population of a bit over a million in the broader urban area. It has spread out all over North Leinster. It is now a very low-density city by international standards. And, of course, low-density cities are a bad market for railways of any kind, whether they're fixed-line ones, mainline ones, or ones you've got to build trams or whatever it is. And those kind of spread out low density cities are ideal for a bus based public transport system. It reaches the whole market.
Yeah, but the kind of decisions that you have to make, I mean, the reason people would like an underground is that the overground situation is appalling at Rusher.
No, the reason is because they haven't a clue how much it costs.
Oh, I mean, forget about the cost.
It's
what they want. They want to be able to move from A to B to C to D without sitting in a traffic jam for 45 minutes.
Yes, and every motorist in Dublin wants all of the other motorists to take public transport so that they can continue to drive. That's the way it is.
So what needs to be done? I mean, you've said that buses are flexible. They can go anywhere. They can be moved from street to street because they're not on tracks and therefore they're not confined. They can go where the demand is.
Yeah. But in addition to that, you can expand the bus system in Dublin, which I think has improved in recent years. I use the buses occasionally. And Dublin Bus, I think, is doing a better job than it did 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But the real feature about buses is that you get good value for the money you invest. If you spend money on bus lanes, if you spend money on bus ways, that is special rights of way for the buses, if you spend money on better designed bus stops, on electronic methods of payment.
Yeah, which they're doing all of this.
They're trying to do all that and cut out the taking cash on buses and so forth and give buses priority at intersections and all of that kind of thing. You can achieve a lot with buses, but you don't have to spend an absolute flipping fortune. Now, once you say, I want to have steel wheels rather than rubber wheels on my public transport, that means that they can no longer go everywhere. They can only go where you've put down the steel tracks. And if, in addition, you want to dig an enormous hole in the ground and have an underground steel wheel public transport system, the costs go out the window. And people just don't understand that the initial estimate for Metro was 3,000 million. If you told people it was 300 million, which is one-tenth of that amount, they wouldn't notice the difference. People don't count the number of zeros after the first digit. And for 3,000 million, which is what they're proposing to spend on this, you could have in Dublin the finest bus system ever produced anywhere in the entire history of the world that would go everywhere. So my objection to the Metro plan is not that it won't provide benefits for people who live in Swords, but it just won't provide enough benefits to justify the cost. The other point is that people in Swords already have a rapid transport system into the city of Dublin through a tunnel. It's called the Swords Express, and it's terrific and very popular.
So therefore, they don't need this. What about people arriving in the airport who want to get on a train or a tram rather than take a bus or take a taxi?
Well, they can take a hike. Dublin Airport has a really extensive bus-based public transport set up now, which provides services not just all around the city of Dublin, but all around the country. And interestingly, I was looking at the figures just recently, the percentage of passengers at Dublin Airport who use public transport is higher than the percentage at various airports in Britain that have trains and trams and buses. The percentage, the public transport share at Dublin is higher than it is at Manchester, which is a comparable size airport. And people go on about this. Dublin must have an underground railway. I sometimes think it's just because it's new and it's shiny and the minister can open it with an enormous big scissors. The reality is that the bus-based system at Dublin has improved hugely in the last few years. It is Dublin Airport is now the biggest bus station in Ireland.
Okay, so Colm, your advice to all of them is to stay your hand a bit, do the research, look at cost-benefit, and then... And only then make a decision, because you feel we're rushing into this.
Well, I just think that the temptation, the natural temptation of politicians in what presumably is an election year, is to give in to every group that comes along saying, can we please have money? The public service trade unions want money. The teachers want pay restoration. All the trade unions, the semi-state companies want pay increases. There are disputes coming down the line. There have been some already. There are people who want tax reductions, naturally. There's a story in the paper this morning that people who think they work for the government but don't would like to have public service pensions, and so on, and so on, and so on. And so, there will be a new heart-rending appeal for more Dosh every week between now and the budget.
Yeah. And will confidence and supply resist all of these temptations to yield?
Well, I think that the minister really should stick to his guns and say, look, I am not prepared to run a planned budget deficit next year, which will be the 11th in a row on top of all the debts out there. And the outlook internationally, there's evidence now that the recovery, strong economic recovery in continental Europe, is beginning to slow down a little bit. I'm not saying it's over. We've had a very good run. I mean, this economy has been expanding for 5 years now.
And we've got the unknowable Brexit looming and all of that.
And Brexit could be negotiated sensibly. The British government doesn't seem to be keen to do that. And there is a non-trivial risk that Brexit could be an enormous flipping mess. So for all those reasons, I think the government should keep our powder dry.
Colm McCarthy, thank you very much for joining us.